This is Jim Ketterer. I'm here at WAMC with Ambassador Robert Gassende to talk to him about his long career in the U.S. Foreign Service as a diplomat, intersecting with some of the most important incidents, events, and moments in the history of this second half of the 20th century. Ambassador Gassende, after your service in Somalia and your change in course from not becoming the ambassador to Eritrea, you ended up going to Russia in 1995, which is an incredibly important time in U.S.-Russian relations, an incredibly important time in the history of Russia. And Boris Yeltsin is president. You get there in 1995, and what's the scene?
The scene is that most everyone expected that after the Somali fiasco, I would resign and write a book or something criticizing, you know, what had gone on. Mary Beth and I talked about it, and we decided it wasn't a time to resign. It was a time to go take another assignment in the U.S. Information Agency. So I went to the agency and sought to become Minister Counsel for Public Affairs at the American Embassy in either Rome or Moscow. Very quickly, a woman was assigned to Rome, and so that came off the list. And then the agency asked me, you know, what makes you think you're qualified to go to Moscow? And I said, I have a facility with language and a fascination with the place. We decided it would be more interesting to go to Moscow than to retire. So we went to Russian language training, and then we went out to Moscow. It was a fascinating time in Moscow because Boris Yeltsin was president, and Russia was really becoming a different place.
Yeah, the Cold War had ended. There was a sense in the United States, in retrospect, probably highly misguided, but that this was, as Francis Fukuyama said, the end of history, that democracy was prevailing, that we had won, quote-unquote, the Cold War, and that Russia was greatly weakened, but that there were all kinds of opportunities to establish new ties with the West, with the United States, with Western Europe, and beyond. And of course, you're there as the chief public diplomat, the head of public diplomacy for the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, and there's all kinds of opportunities to engage in public diplomacy at the highest level.
Yes, we were interested in the future. We were focused largely on young people. We were focused on trying to give young Russians a direct experience at studying and living in the United States. Vladimir Putin later cut off all these programs. He said, we take their young people, we bring them to America, we propagandize them, and they come back hating Russia. He was correct in just the last part of that. We had, at one point, over 600 young people studying for a year at American high schools. Imagine trying to organize an operation in our country, keeping it quiet from the public, that would propagandize these young people studying in our country. It was just ridiculous. There's no way we would be able to do that. But it was true. They came back hating their country, not hating their country, hating its government. Hating its government because they saw that by living in America for a bit, that there were alternatives to living under such a heavy hand.
But this, in looking back, this was an opportunity for the U.S. and for Russia to establish long-lasting positive relations. It might be hard to imagine now, given the state of U.S. Russian relations, but there were opportunities, there were moments, and there were mistakes that were made. One of the great old hands of Russia and kind of a godfather in American foreign policy, George Kennan, was saying that it would be a mistake to expand NATO. It would be a mistake to kind of poke the bear. You have a different view on this than Kennan did, I think.
Kennan was correct in the sense that if we were going to expand NATO, we should do that being very careful not to poke the bear. If we were going to expand NATO, I think Kennan agreed with this, expand it by including Russia and making NATO into a real all-Europe international security agency. But to leave Russia out was to criticize them. That was not the right way to do it.
To criticize them and to give them the sense that they're being encircled.
Yes.
That their moment of great weakness is being taken advantage of. And a country with, you know, the deep and rich history of Russia, this wasn't going to end well.
Exactly. Russia has forever been concerned about people encroaching on their borders. Now we see Russia waging a war against Ukraine, which people like Putin can't imagine that Ukraine is anything but part of Russia.
Now, you've mentioned Putin a couple times. He was, in the 3 years that you were there, he was lurking in the background, right?
He was. He came up through contact with the guy who had been mayor of St. Petersburg, a man named Sobchak, who unfortunately died all too young. But Putin was an ally of Sobchak's, and it was via Sobchak that he came to the attention of Boris Yeltsin.
And I think you were there when Yeltsin stood for election, is that correct?
Yes.
And there were some moments in that electoral process that I think gave people around the world, including and in Russia, a great pause, great concern about Yeltsin's health, his viability going forward as president, but also the direction that Russia was really going in.
There was less concern about the direction, long-term direction, Yeltsin had in mind. He was seeking to create a democratic society. It was a great tragedy that he was by then too sick to really carry on as president. Sick. He was an alcoholic, without a doubt. He simply couldn't carry on. And eventually he just resigned and turned the country over to Vladimir Putin. The deal, people said, was that Putin would promise not to prosecute Yeltsin's daughters if he became president. And whether that's true or not, the daughters never got prosecuted.
While your time in Russia was coming to an end, this also happened to coincide with the time that the Clinton administration was striking a deal with Senator Jesse Helms on the dissolution of the very agency that you worked for, the U.S. Information Agency, that was in charge of overseeing our entire public diplomacy portfolio.
Yes, Madeleine Albright had been the child of a Czech diplomat who was really a person involved in information and cultural relations. So she understood the value and importance of it, and she fostered the abolition of USIA because she wanted to control those reins within the State Department. And so USIA was abolished. Just as I retired, the agency went out of existence, and its functions were turned over to the Department of State.
And those functions do continue, largely through the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs at the State Department. But at the same time, there are many who lament USIA's dissolution. I mean, I can recall my time living in Tunisia, going to USIA's American Library down the street from where I went to school. And these libraries were around the world, and this is like one of many, many, many examples of the things that were lost as USIA went away.
Yes. The most visible part of American presence was destroyed with the abolition of the U.S. Information Agency.
It also happened to be the same year that our embassies were attacked in Tanzania and Kenya. And so as USIA went away, we became very concerned about embassy security, even more so after 9/11 that happened 3 years later. And, you know, now many of our embassies are moved out of city centers into highly fortified fortresses.
Yes. Very unfortunate development. Where we used to seek to be at the heart of the matter, we now seek to be safe far away from the center of most cities. And the idea of operating open public facilities that people can go into, especially young people, students, young people can go in and borrow books or look at films, that's completely gone. So now security officers sit in the catbird seat. What I mean by that is that if a public diplomacy officer says that he or she wants to do something across town outside the embassy premises, the security officer decides whether or not that's feasible. And most security officers will take no chances. And so the general answer to someone traveling outside the embassy facilities is no. So we operate a bunch of peripheral missions at the edges of cities where they're physically safe, but they're out of the reach of the local population.
So the kind of public diplomacy that you practiced, starting as a officer in Libya and then over the many other countries that we've talked about, that style of public diplomacy is much more difficult to carry out now if you are beginning one's career in the Foreign Service.
I would say it's impossible.
And what do you think is the toll that's taken
for
our diplomacy?
Increasingly, the U.S. is misunderstood abroad. Its policies are interpreted malevolently, to put it bluntly. Its policies are perceived to be self-serving and have no interest in the local population.
And in their place, often, in my experience, conspiracy theories fill the vacuum.
Yes, they do. We're behind everything bad that ever takes place anywhere in the world. Rarely are we truly appreciated for anything good we might by happenstance do.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to end, if this is appropriate, with just three bits of advice. First of all, I couldn't have done anything that I did in the diplomatic service without the steadfast, long support of my wife. She was my partner in everything that we did, and without her backing up what I was trying to do, little would have happened. Then there are three people that I would advise one look to for information on key issues today. Two named Timothy Garton Ash, who is at Oxford University. That's a place in England. Timothy D. Snyder, who is at Yale University. That's a place in Southern Connecticut. And perhaps there's no more important, no more valuable member of our foreign policy team now than William Burns, the director of our Central Intelligence Agency. Bill Burns is the son of a retired Army Major General. He himself was former ambassador to Russia and to Jordan. And he's former director of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. So look at Ash, Snyder, and Burns. Just Google them. If you see them writing something, read it.
I'm Jim Ketterer, speaking with Ambassador Robert R. Gassende about his career in the diplomatic corps in a special six-part series for the Roundtable on WAMC. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the U.S. Foreign Service.